The opinions expressed by guests of this show are their own and do not necessarily align with those of us here at the Animal Soulmates podcast.
We, Trevor and I, spend a lot of time, even to this day, reminding each other that our job is to love Freya, and as her guardians, as her parents, whatever label you choose to use, our job is to always choose the next best right thing we can for her. And as long as we're doing that, we're doing the best thing that we can for her, for us, for our family. Next best right thing.
Welcome to the Animal Soulmates podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Abby Viscardi. I'm an animal welfare scientist and, more importantly, an obsessed dog mom. I believe that the unconditional love and connection that we share with our animals is more powerful than we realize. This podcast will honor the stories of these amazing creatures that have walked with us and changed our lives forever. So join me, and together we will explore the true power of the human-animal bond. Thank you so much for joining me for another episode of the Animal Soulmates podcast. I have another beautiful animal soulmate story to share with you this week. Crystal Heiss was working in academia when her and her husband Trevor adopted the cutest little golden puppy named Freya. In contrast to some of the other stories we've heard this season, Crystal's soulmate connection with Freya did not happen overnight. Once Crystal had a career change and was able to work from home, she realized how important Freya was to her, and she started to feel a deep connection to Freya, who she now calls her heart dog. These two gals have been through so much together, including a recent cancer diagnosis that clearly demonstrates the unwavering devotion that Freya's parents have for her. Crystal is currently a pet portrait artist who also has a blog full of resources on how to advocate for your dog, what it's like going through cancer treatment with a beloved pet, and how to know if your dog is a heart dog. I really enjoyed chatting with Crystal and hearing the absolute love in her voice when she was talking about her girl. So please enjoy episode 11, A Lab Mix Named Freya.
Hi, I am Crystal Heiss. I was born and raised in Central Florida in the Space Coast area. And I am an artist specializing in painted portraits of heart dogs.
And what was your childhood like with regards to animals in the home?
Great question. Very different from the situation that I have now, actually. I wasn't what you would call the prototypical animal crazy kid, although I was fond of animals. I just wasn't the kind of kid that was always with the dog or always with the cat. Growing up in Florida maybe has some influence on this, but I was more interested in dolphins than I was in pets. I don't know what to tell you. But we did have animals growing up. We had two dogs, a cat. We even had a rabbit. And I liked them. You could even say I loved them, but I didn't have that deep, soulful connection with them like I do with Freya. Things have taken a very interesting journey for me to get where I am now, not only having what I consider a heart dog, but connecting with clients who have heart dogs and creating this incredible artwork for them. So it's been a bit of a journey, but I love where I am with my girl.
And so I think it would be nice right out of the gate to define what is a heart dog. So what is a heart dog to you and what is a heart dog in general?
That's a great question, especially considering your podcast is the Animal Soulmates podcast. I hear a lot of people that I work with, I hear the term soul dog a lot, which is very similar to your soulmates word. I have heard the phrase heart dog probably very beginning of my career. I heard someone refer to her dog as a heart dog, and I latched onto that phrase because immediately it wasn't even like she defined it, but to me, I created what it meant to me in my heart and in my mind. And to me, it's the relationship that you have with a pet. It's the phrase heart dog. It's the big things. It's the little things. It's all the moments in between. It's feeling, emotion, memory, connection. It's really an understanding between two souls. It's a bond that makes your life so much better and brighter and fuller just by being a part of you and your dog. So that's the definition that I've created, but it's also something you just feel and you know.
How do you know that Freya is your heart dog?
It did not happen right away. I know that a lot of people have different stories about how they just completely fell head over heels for their dog. Some people, it's love at first sight kind of thing. For me, probably because of my previous experience with animals, it was a slow rolled, all of a sudden I realized 3 years into it kind of thing. We've been through a lot together. When I first got her, I was working a full-time 9-to-5 job, 45 minutes from the home. So we spent the mornings together and the evenings together, and my husband was working at SpaceX at the time. And so there were very long days that he would be gone and the house would get lonely. And so we got a puppy, and she was an incredible companion in the evenings or just in general. But for most of the day, when I was at work all day, I wasn't necessarily seeing her because she was at home. When I decided to leave my 9-to-5 job and start my own business as an artist, I was spending a lot more time with her. And so I really feel like that kind of 3.5 years into having her is when I really got to know her and when we really started to grow our bond in that way. And so it was, yeah, it was a slow roll to, holy cow, I care about this dog more than anything I ever could have expressed before. It was a very slow process, but it was noticing all of the little things, all of the big things, the way she would make me laugh, the way that I missed her when I was gone, the way we started to plan our life around her. And I started taking note of a lot of these things. I actually ended up writing a blog post of the 100 reasons why I love Freya and know that she's my heart dog. And I think that it's so fabulous to have recorded all of those things, but just to remember all of the things that I love about her. It's silly things like her ears. That's all. Just her ears. I love that. To just the way she snuggles on the couch or how she's learned the word coffee. So in the morning, if Trevor and I say, hey, you want to go get coffee? She perks up because she knows that she gets to go for a ride in the car to go get coffee. Like just silly things like that, that make your heart so full. And it's all of those things all wrapped up together where you're like, wow, okay, this is something special. This is not just, oh, just a dog kind of scenario. This is soul stuff.
So you'll appreciate this being a fellow crooner fan, but the song, These Foolish Things Remind Me of You, I'm not sure if you've heard that song, but it's, you know, all these little small things that suddenly remind someone of another person when they're gone. And that song hits a little differently once I lost my soulmate animal, because it truly is the small, what you would consider foolish things that you miss the most. It's not even necessarily the big aspects of dog ownership or pet ownership. It's like the small little things, like the way the sound of her snoring, or like when she would shake and her ears would hit against her head and that sound, and the way she would saunter into a room and pant. And those are the small things that make up the big thing. And so, yeah, I loved your blog post. I did go through all the 100 reasons why Freya is your heart dog, because it is, it truly is just like all the little things that make them who they are.
And I do use those interchangeably, heart dog, soulmate. To me, on a personal level, those are all, for intents and purposes, all the same in terms of what they mean, at least for me. But yeah, absolutely. The crooked front teeth, the way she wants pup cups, the way she gets excited for a new bag of food to be opened. It's just, sometimes they're ridiculous, but they're the things that make you laugh and just guffaw because they're so funny. The things that if you told a non-dog person, they'd be like, what? What are you talking about? But another dog person, they know. They know.
And I always tell other people with dogs who are complaining, it could be with cats too, but I usually talk to people about their dogs. But when they'll say, oh my God, yeah, there's this one squeaky toy that they pick up and they just squeak it nonstop. It drives us crazy. And I always say, that's the thing that you're going to miss the most though, when they're not around. The thing that drives you the most crazy about that animal is what you're going to miss the most.
Absolutely. Because it made an impact. Because things like that stick in your brain and they stick in your heart. And oh yeah, you're going to remember that. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
And so Freya, did she come from an animal shelter?
She did come from a rescue. We spent a decent amount of time looking. I knew I wanted a dog that was medium to large size, so not super tiny and not gigantic. We weren't being super specific in what we were looking for, but I was gravitating towards the mixes that had some form of like lab or golden personality, but they didn't have to be exactly that. Like, I was definitely open, but that's what I was looking for. We were actually told when we adopted her that she was a golden retriever German shepherd mix. Later on, we did DNA testing. She has none of those things in her. So I thought that was quite funny. But, oh, we love her all the same. But it was just amusing. That's what the rescue thought that she was, because she looked like this little blonde fluff ball. But yeah, no, definitely not those things.
There was a paper you might be interested in that came out that looked at, I think it was like breed selection of dogs in a shelter, or what you're saying, like pit bull mix, German shepherd mix. And then they did DNA testing and then found out exactly what's in those dogs. And it's so crazy. A dog that could look identical to the exact same markings as a German shepherd has just no shepherd in them at all.
Yeah.
So what is in Freya then?
So she is part lab, part American Staffy, part Chow. She's got like the purple spotted tongue,
which
I love. And then a lot of these are small parts. I think the lab was the biggest part. I think there was like part Pomeranian or something, like small dog random, that I'm like, where did this come from? And then it was like 50% unknown. I don't know. But she looks mostly like a yellow lab. Like, when most people see her, she's got features that put her towards that category. She's got a much smaller snout though than your average lab that's purebred.
So was she in a group with litter mates and you were able to select her, or was she the only puppy?
She had four other brothers and sisters, and she was actually the one that we requested when we put in the application, but somebody had already requested her above us, and I guess their virtual home visit that they did with the rescue didn't go the way they were expecting. And so they called me up and said, she's available again. Would you like her? And we said, heck yeah. So we got to go pick her up at this adorable little like Oktoberfest event in Orlando. And so one of the first pictures I have with her is sitting on this hay bale holding her. There's all these Halloween Thanksgiving decorations around us. I've got the most gigantic smile on my face. You can see the cords of my neck sticking out because I'm smiling so big.
Oh my gosh.
One of my favorite memories, just how excited I was to bring her home. Even though she wasn't my heart dog back then, I was still super, super excited to bring her into the family.
So what about her picture compared to her brothers and sisters really drew you to her specifically?
She looked inquisitive. She wasn't looking directly at the camera. She just had this curiosity about her in the photograph. And oh my gosh, is that true to this day? I actually just wrote a blog post about this recently on my website. It's titled something like, why I don't take my dog on walks, and you don't have to either. I do take her out for walks. We just don't call them walks. We call them sniffaries, because Freya is very much I would like to sniff everything, thank you very much. She's not a sled dog. She just wants to investigate all of the things. We let her choose the path unless we're really pressed for time, or there's a trigger coming or something else going on, safety, of course. But for the most part, in our neighborhood, my husband and I try to let her choose the direction of our walk, because most of our roads connect so we can get back to the house. But she gets to choose her path.
Has she always been a stop and smell the roses kind of gal?
When we first brought her out on leash, she wanted to just go. But relatively quickly, she developed that kind of walking personality where she wanted to stop and smell everything. She definitely has her spot. Like when we go past a certain house, a specific mailbox, she wants to stop there every time. A certain stop sign, she always stops there. She's got her spots. She likes to like go to the bathroom and sniff the pee mail and leave her own messages. Yeah.
Yeah, she's getting all the news of the neighborhood in that little sniff walk. Yeah, it's very important.
Exactly. That's my girl.
And then you obviously classify her as your heart dog. Does your husband classify her as his heart dog?
I believe that he would. I have heard him use that phrase before. I definitely feel like I've bonded more closely to her just because I've spent more time with her. He left SpaceX recently, but he worked a 9-to-5 job much longer than I did. So I've definitely had a lot more FaceTime with her over the years. But one of the things that I absolutely adore about having her as part of our family is seeing him interact with her, seeing who he is when he's with her. The way he plays with her, the way that he just dotes on her, how he likes to give her treats or play go find it or pick a hand, which hand is the treat in, because she's got a great sniffer. So she enjoys that kind of game. It's not a tricksy type of game, but she enjoys it. Seeing him get down on all fours and roughhouse with her, it is just adorable. And I love it so much. And while I don't know that he would have called it that without being around me for so many years, I definitely think that there's a strong bond there that is akin to that, even if he wouldn't have come up with that term on his own.
It's interesting that the connection that we can have with our pets, even within the same household, can be so different. Like, I'm such a dog mom to my dogs, where my significant other is definitely, he would not classify himself as a dog dad, even though I classify him as daddy to the dogs.
Sure. Yeah.
He would not say he's the prototypical kind of dog dad. He has a very different relationship with them. But honestly, it's been a learning experience for me, being like, it's different, but it's not less than, because I'm like the over exuberant, like my heart's on my sleeve. I gush over all of them. I take a million pictures. I want to just talk about my dogs all the time. Where he's not that way, but he still loves them like they're his babies, as much as he doesn't want to admit that.
Yes, I totally get it.
So I would love to talk a little bit about Freya's cancer diagnosis, if you don't mind us transitioning mm-hmm. into that. So how did the cancer come about? How did they find it? And yeah, we'll start with that.
It's actually been almost exactly a year. Like, today's the 29th? Yeah, almost exactly a year in a couple days. So I was at a mastermind retreat with some of my other artist besties, my girlfriends, in Georgia at, let's see, that would have been the beginning of March, I think. And Trevor texted me to let me know, hey, Freya's being a little picky with her eating. I'm like, okay, that's strange. Maybe get her some wet dog food, or cook her some chicken or some eggs, or just various things that she likes that's relatively healthy-ish to supplement. Maybe we'll make a vet appointment for her if we need to. And things seemed to get better. So stopped thinking about it for a little bit. I got home from a little mastermind retreat, and then towards the end of the month, the picky eating started again. Then it was, she would go to sniff her food and then wouldn't eat at all. So we're like, this is really strange. When she was a puppy, there was a period of time where, like, the food that she was eating, she didn't seem to like anymore. So we switched foods. So we tried that. We switched foods, and she got really excited and new food. She likes new bags of food, as we mentioned earlier. So she started eating again. The very next meal, she wasn't interested, or seemed interested, but wouldn't eat. So I went out and bought some more wet food, called the vet, scheduled an appointment at our local vet. This was actually before I changed local vets. So I had an appointment with our local vet here. And concurrently, I had already been doing research on changing vets. I talk a lot about this on my website and in my blog, but the vet that we had been taking Freya to, there's nothing wrong with them. They are wonderful people. But Freya had established a fear association with that location. And so we were trying to work towards moving her to a different place to see if that would help. And I found there was a fear-free certified clinic. The whole clinic was certified about an hour away from us. So not exactly local. I'm willing to move heaven and earth for my little girl. I called them and I kind of explained the situation. Hey, she's not eating. I think there's something wrong with her teeth. Like, maybe we need a dental procedure. And they were able to get us in the next day, which was before the appointment with the other vet we had been taking her to. So I'm like, great. All right, let's establish her as a new patient, get her looked at this new vet that I'd like to go to anyway. Called and canceled the appointment at the other place. So I'm really bad at telling long stories in a short time frame. So feel free to let me know to
take as much time. No, I love it. I love it.
So because she struggles going to the vet, she's on trazodone. So gave her some trazodone. She would eat treats during this whole time period. She would eat treats, but she wasn't eating her kibble. And as we were leading up to this appointment, she stopped eating. Like, we would cut up a piece of like baked chicken or something like that, and she would eat maybe a piece and then she would stop. And I'm like, okay, this is a problem. If she's not interested in human food, this is an issue. She would take treats here and there. But so we brought her to this new vet and they were fantastic. She was on trazodone, but she hadn't been eating very much. So the trazodone had her completely like almost knocked out. She seemed, I think the vet described her as like the most zen dog she's ever seen, just because she was so hopped up on trazodone. And while we were there, she, the vet, Dr. Witt, took blood work. They did a urinalysis and she came back into the room. And I said, listen, we are an hour away. If because she looked at her teeth and she said, I think the teeth are fine. I'm like, crap, that's what I thought we were in here for. So now we're trying to figure out what's going on. I said, so if the blood test and the urinalysis come back and everything's fine, what's the next step? And she said, we'd probably want to take some x-rays. And I looked at Trev and I'm like, hey, can we just do that now? And he was completely on board. And we asked the vet, is that something you guys can just do? And they said, yes, absolutely. Especially she's so calm right now. Let's do it. They take some abdominal x-rays or chest x-rays of her torso, basically. And she said, I'll call you tomorrow with the results. And all of this, by the way, is detailed in my blog. If people want to end up reading a little bit more specificity about dates and timelines and just how exactly everything went on, it's in my Canine Cancer Diaries blog. But the next morning, Dr. Witt called us at 8 a.m., maybe even a little before. So super early in the morning. And she said, guys, I have some preliminary results. Needed to call you right away. I think you need to get an abdominal ultrasound because there's some stuff that I'm really not sure of on these x-rays. And if it were my dog, I would try to get this taken care of today. I would not wait. To this day, I am just so full of gratitude for this woman because I believe from the bottom of my heart that her being willing to give me that extra little push right from the get-go of, if this were my dog, I would blank, was very powerful for me because I said, okay, we'll figure out what's going on. She had access to a radiologist, but they wouldn't be able, I think this was like a Wednesday or a Thursday, I don't remember exactly, and they wouldn't have the person that they would need until the next Monday. So she said, I would call around to see if you can get her in today. So she gave us a couple of recommendations. Trev took a couple of phone numbers and he started calling, and then I started calling. Funnily enough, the vet that we had been going to has another clinic that has an ultrasound machine. And I remember calling them and I said hello to the woman on the other line and I started bawling. And she was so kind. I know that vets' offices deal with so much, and especially with the explosion of population growth in my area here in Central Florida, every vet clinic is overcrowded. They have more clients than they know what to do with, and probably an equal number of personalities to have to deal with. And I know it's hard. But this woman who answered the phone was very calm and said, take whatever time you need. I'm here. Tell me what you need. And I finally got out the fact that we had an x-ray with another vet yesterday, and she's telling me that I need to get Freya an abdominal ultrasound. And is it at all possible for us to come in today? I know that's probably impossible, but I'm just grasping at straws here. If there's anything you guys can do, or if there's a direction you can point me to, I would really appreciate it. And she put me on hold and she said, come in at 3:00. Once again, I am so full of gratitude. Like, this experience has been one of the hardest experiences of my entire life. And yet, sprinkled throughout, I just have so much thankfulness and gratitude to all of the people involved, because I have been a very fragile, vulnerable person throughout this entire process. And I feel like I have just been given such a gift in the people that I have worked with throughout this. So we show up, she gets the abdominal ultrasound, and I know it's bad. That comes back in and I can just tell. And she says, there's definitely a mass. I'm not really sure what kind it is because we can't really tell. It could be an abscess. It could be a tumor. The next step is going to be exploratory surgery because I'm concerned about where it's originating from. They didn't know exactly where it was coming from. And so they would need to find out. And so we spent a lot of time talking to her. And Trevor, oh my gosh, bless him. He asked this vet directly, said, if this was your dog, where would you go? What would you do? Because again, they had someone who could do the surgery and she went and talked to this woman. She was happy to do it tomorrow morning. But they're a relatively small vet clinic and it was going to be an exploratory surgery. And she said, I honestly don't know what to tell you about how this, it's going to be exploratory surgery. We just don't know. So if we open her up and we find something that we're not prepared to deal with, we'd have to close her back up and send you somewhere else. And so that's when we were like, okay, where is the somewhere else? Like, where should we be going here? And we live in Central Florida. A lot of the vets from our area went to UF for vet school. At least the vets that I've been to, a lot of the diplomas on the wall are from UF. And so she said, if it were me, I would go up to UF and I would go tonight. because I'm worried about her spleen. She said, I'm not sure where it's originating from, but if it's adhered to the spleen and the spleen ruptures, I'm worried about her bleeding out. So cue panic mode. We go home and we pack some clothes and we basically pack up Frey and go to Starbucks, get some pup cups, start taking pictures of all of the things, loving on her, being okay 1 minute and falling apart the next minute. And we drive up to UF and it's about a 3-hour drive for us from where we are. We show up in the emergency room. We walk in the door, start talking to the person at the front desk, and I lose it again. The woman was very nice. Basically, we were told to wait and they were going to triage her. And so we're waiting in the waiting room and Freya's freaking out because I don't think at this point I had been able to give her trazodone because we were just all over the place. So she is not on anything. So she is whining and trying to crawl up into our lap. And finally have someone come out to talk to us. They're going to take her back and triage her and let us know. So Freya does not like going in the back of any vet. So she takes the leash and Freya starts trying to walk and then trying to turn around and not go back. And this is one of the only things that I have regrets about is this little moment here, because I didn't realize at the time that they were going to take her back and I wasn't going to be able to see her again that night. I didn't know that. And this is the only part where I and Trevor and I both feel that we wish that we could have stopped for like just a second and given her a big hug and just be like, I know this is hard. I love you so, so much. It's going to be okay. And then tried to help her beyond the door, because the look on her face when she looked back, like, what, where are you taking me? What's going on? Is burned into my brain. And that's really the only part of this that I would say that I wish I had done differently. But that's just, I didn't know. Let's see. I'll try and make this go a little bit faster. The first part's just the hardest. This beginning part is the toughest part because there's so much that was unknown at the time, right? She stayed overnight. Oh, we had packed all of our clothes. We promptly forgot them. We did not have suitcases with us. So that was kind of a comedic relief part. Like, we packed, but we didn't bring anything. We were basically told that she was going to be looked at tonight, cared for, and then they would call us in the morning, found a hotel room. They called us in the morning, said, we're going to do a CT scan so that we can find out a little bit more about where the mass is and just how urgent things are to see if she needs to go into surgery immediately. So the whole next day was very hard because we were just waiting on pins and needles for a phone call. So we got the results, I don't know, like after lunchtime, maybe 2 o'clock-ish. I'm not sure. I'm sure the details are in my blog. I'm sorry if I'm misremembering things here. But they did the CT. It looked like it was originating from her left kidney, but there were adherences to the spleen and the pancreas and potentially the stomach. And that's why she wasn't eating. So to go back to the beginning of your question, how do we know? She wasn't eating, and it's because there was this huge mass in her abdomen that was pressing up against her stomach such that there was just no room for her to eat anything of substance. So they determined, yes, she needed surgery. Yes, she needed it very soon, but no, it wasn't so emergent. We had to do it today. So they actually sent us home over the weekend. And then we were going to have a surgery, or we had a surgery consult with surgical oncology on Monday. And assuming that went well, surgery would be scheduled for Tuesday. We went home and we started thinking about how we were going to spend the weekend. Now, little sidebar here. Have you seen, oh my gosh, The Last of Us?
No, I haven't.
Okay. I talk about this in the blog post. There's an episode that we had just watched recently that was very poignant, and I feel like this weekend was almost a little bit inspired by that episode. But the point of it is you realize that something big is coming and you don't know how it's going to go. And you know that you have this time. How do you spend it? Now, we were limited in what we could do because she wasn't really eating and she didn't have a lot of energy. So we couldn't go do these crazy, big, insane things. And so we came up with a list on the way home, and it was basically, what are Freya's favorite things? And how many of them can we accomplish in a weekend? And it was things like going for a walk in the neighborhood, going for a Sunday drive and getting a bagel and sharing some eggs and sausage and cheese and watching a movie on the couch and pulling weeds in the front garden bed, because as ridiculous as that sounds, when Trevor and I are pulling weeds, she likes to go in there and grab at whatever looks the most like grass.
Oh my
she
gosh.
Would pull out. So we made this list of things and we did them all. And it was beautiful and heartbreaking at the same time. But we did them. And I am still so, so pleased and gracious that Trevor and I both took the time to spend that with our girl. And then Monday was really hard. Going back up TUF was really hard. Even though we knew that's where we needed to be and what we needed to do, it was really hard.
Did you know at this point that it was cancer?
No, we guessed. Everyone guessed that it was. There was like this small chance that it could be an abscess, but they didn't really think that it was. But because of the location, it was a, we don't know what it is. We're assuming it's cancer. But right now it's just this big mass that's pressing up against her stomach and these other things that is problematic and needs to come out.
So it was one mass that was adhered to these multiple locations.
Correct.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Correct.
Okay.
And it turns out it was originating from the left kidney. I actually got to see the CT scan. I took a little recording on my phone of the computer screen. So I have images of what that looked like, and it is huge. It's gigantic. But because of the location where it was basically hidden as far as looking at her, because it just looked like instead of her belly coming up towards the pelvis, it just went like this. So it just sat in that spot below her rib cage down here. So if her rib cage, I'm sorry for the listeners, they can't see the hand gestures I'm making, but her rib cage goes like this. It was like right here, but it wasn't like it was this mass that was coming off of the side of her or on an arm or a leg or anything like that. So we had no idea. Thank goodness we brought her in to get her teeth checked. Otherwise, there's no way we would have known. The surgical oncologist was amazing. Everyone up at UF was amazing. He was very professional, but also as kind as you can be when you're delivering kind of crappy news. But to get to the rest of the story, she had to have the surgery. It was scheduled for the next day. We did have an event during surgery where she coded on the table, and he called me and said, gosh, I'm again forever grateful to him for handling the phone call like this. He called and said, something's happened, but I need to tell you right now, she's okay. Bless people like that just come out of the gate, don't bury the lead. She's okay, but something happened and we need to decide where to go from here. And it was a do we continue or do we not scenario. But the truth was they had to do the surgery. Like there was no let's try again tomorrow, because the same thing could have happened tomorrow. They had the whole anesthesia team. They were taking care of things. We decided to proceed. Oh my gosh, I was such a wreck that day. But when we got the phone call that surgery was done and that she was okay and that she was coming out of it, it was such a relief. I about collapsed in the parking garage where we were walking out of the bookstore because we were just wandering, kind of window shopping because we didn't know what to do with ourselves. And it just felt so good to know, okay, we've made it to this step. We don't know what's going to happen, but at least we're here, especially after the coding event several hours prior. So we didn't actually get to see her for a couple of days because she was in recovery and wasn't quite ready to see us. But I have lots of photos and videos of the first time we did get to see her. And, you know, she recovered so well. Oh my gosh, she is my little brave champion. But then came the waiting, the what is this, right? What was the mass? And they would do all these tests and not specific. More tests, no answers. More tests, no answers. It was probably going on more than a month after surgery where we did not know. I mean, it wasn't an abscess. We knew that. At this point, we know it's cancer, but we didn't know what kind. And they were trying to get down to the specificity so that they could figure out what to give her. Nothing. Basically, it's a poorly differentiated sarcoma. And it was coming from the left kidney. So during surgery, they removed the mass. They removed her left kidney. They removed a portion of her pancreas. They removed her spleen. They didn't have to take out any tissue from the stomach. He was able to get enough of it that they didn't have to do that. That would have been a whole nother thing if they had to do a partial resection of the stomach. They did not. But yeah, all of the testing came back negative, which in a lot of cases was good because we didn't want it to be whatever they were testing for. But it was frustrating to not have an answer. And especially with my kind of science brain, like that was so hard.
Especially when you think about what if we're now a month behind of in terms of treatment. Yeah, that's what would be driving me insane.
Absolutely. We finally get the call where they're like, okay, let's have you come back up here. We're going to just get started on basically a general chemo kind of thing. So we go back up to UF, and that was probably one of the second or third most difficult parts of all of this, because this is where they gave us the prognosis. And that was hard. To this day, I think I've only actually said out loud, maybe twice, what she said to us, because that was just the hardest part.
They didn't know the type of cancer, but they were able to give you a prognosis?
Great question. So she said she looked into as many papers as she could find on renal sarcomas. Okay, so basically sarcomas that originated from the kidney. And unfortunately, there's not a lot of data on it. There are not a lot of data points. They're in numbers very small. But of what research is out there, on average, dogs that were treated for this had a prognosis in the range of 6 to 10 months. And I asked, does that mean from diagnosis or from surgery or from now? And she basically said from prognosis. So yes, a month behind in terms of this. Oh, yeah. I was not okay.
I can't imagine anybody would be okay. That's, oh my God.
We, Trevor and I, spent a lot of time, even to this day, reminding each other that our job is to love Freya. And as her guardians, as her parents, whatever label you choose to use, our job is to always choose the next best right thing we can for her. And as long as we're doing that, we are doing the best thing that we can for her, for us, for our family. Next best right thing. And so throughout this whole process, that's something that we've each had to remind the other person of. And to anyone listening who might have just recently or in the past have joined this club that you didn't want entry into, the next best right thing. That is the best advice that I can give. And that's going to be different for everyone. It's going to be different based on a million variables that I couldn't possibly account for anyone else's situation. But if you think about it from that perspective and try not to future cast as much as possible, and I know that's hard. I do it. I'm very much a planner. It's very difficult. But if you can just try and keep doing the next best right thing, at least you've done everything you can.
And I love that keeping your animal soulmate in the forefront of that too. The next best thing for her. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because depending on the situation, it might have been to not do treatment. Obviously, it depends on what your specific situation is. And for us, it was if the mask can be removed and if she recovers from that, the doctor we talked to originally, he was like, she's got a good chance to bounce back really well. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. The surgery is tough. And there may be things we can't account for, but we knew that was going to be the next best thing for her. So that we just kept at every decision point, that's what we kept doing. And so at this point, it was, okay, she's had surgery, she's healed from surgery, she's doing well so far, now we need to start on chemo. So we ended up doing, we were up there every 3 weeks for 6 rounds of chemo. They wanted to put her on a chemo called doxorubicin, which, funnily enough, in my past life as a scientist, I actually used that in the cancer research lab that I used to work at up there. So that was wild.
Yeah.
But because her heart showed a couple of signs of potential inflammation and reduced fractional shortening, they were concerned about giving that particular drug because it's not quite as heart safe as some other options. So they put her on carboplatin instead, and she got 5 doses of that. We went up for her 6th dose, and this was right around the time when there was a huge chemo shortage, and UF had just run out of carboplatin. And this is how incredible they are, though, up there for us, our personal situation. The doctor that we worked with was able to contact the woman who actually gave us the results and gave us the prognosis, had since moved on to another private clinic, and they still work together in a professional sense. Our doctor at UF called her and said, hey, do you remember Freya? She needs her final dose of carbo. Do you guys have any extra? And they did. So we actually took Freya to this other vet, which, oh my gosh, if I lived in Gainesville, I would take Freya to this vet's office. They were incredible. Their consultation rooms were like low lights, nice couches, washable rugs. Oh man, I wish they were here. It was incredible. It was calm. It was everything I needed in that moment of, oh, I need Freya to get her last dose of chemo. And they got us in same day. She had her last dose of chemo and we got to go home. It's been such a long, hard road, but I feel so lucky. At so many different points, we have been working with incredible people and been able to make decisions for Freya that have been in her best interest that have turned out really well.
I also think, though, in this story, it's worth acknowledging you and Trevor and the action, like the immediate action you took and the dedication you had to her, because not every single pet parent would have done the same thing, dropped everything that weekend and drove right up to UF. So I think it's worth acknowledging the two of you and your role in making this such a success for her.
Thank you. We don't have human children. She is our baby girl and she's family. She's my heart dog, our heart dog. If it's something within our power to be able to help her and be able to do for her, we do. Now, it's not cheap. I like to say that I feel also very lucky that we are in a position where we can do this for her. And one of the blog posts that I've written, I go into extreme detail about the financial side of this, because I understand that when you start talking a diagnosis like cancer and something like surgery, it can feel like a whole lot of dollar signs. And so I wanted to be able to be completely transparent with my audience and therefore yours through this as well, that this is what we paid. And we do have insurance on Freya. I highly recommend look into it. If you don't currently have insurance on your animal, look into it. It is cheaper when the pets are younger and gets more expensive as they get older. But we were very lucky to have been advised to get insurance on her when she turned 8, because we didn't previously. And so she was insured before she got the cancer diagnosis. So there was no pre-existing anything to worry about. So I don't know if you would like to go into any of that in detail or overview or anything like that, but I definitely do have all of the information, at least current through, I think, October is when I wrote the blog post in particular.
Yeah, I did see the blog post where you break down the financial piece of it, which I think is super important in terms of transparency too. And like I mentioned about your blog post earlier, before we started recording, I love just your openness and honesty in there as well, because it removes that sort of fear. It's still scary, obviously, if you get a cancer diagnosis for one of your babies, but the transparency and the honesty that you speak about every step of the way, I think is, it makes you feel not so alone in that.
And that's my goal. I want people to know that this is a crappy, crappy club to become part of, but you don't have to do it alone. I don't know if I would call this luck necessarily, but one of my friends that goes to our local CrossFit gym with us and was a client of mine, their dog had just recently gone through this. And in talking with her in a professional and in a friendship capacity, I basically went through a small portion of their journey with them. And to have just that tiny bit of experience before Freya was diagnosed made me feel like, okay, well, it's not just me. I'm not the only one on earth who has ever gone through this. And especially that first like full week, I think in my blogs, I call it like day one through day seven. Basically, it was day by day, everything was happening. There was so much. And I learned a lot about myself through this process that I was surprised by, from like a mental health capacity and even just how I reacted to things. The thing that surprised me the most was I wanted to throw my phone across the room if I got a text message that said, oh, I'm so sorry. And it was frustrating to me because I'm like, why am I reacting like this? It was so triggering for me to hear, I'm sorry, because she's still here. And in my head, hearing, I'm so sorry, was akin to the passing of someone. And she hadn't passed, but I didn't know how it was going to go. And I was terrified. So it was very enlightening in a very weird way to learn just how I reacted in that particular sense. And so the reason I'm describing this is that one of the other blog posts that I've written in this series is a resources blog. And at the top, I have this kind of TLDR explanation of like just high points of things that I've learned about myself and about the process that I just wanted to share with people. And can I read a couple of them?
Yes, please do. Please do.
So it's a quick summary of my recommendations. Number one is try to decide early on who, friends, family, coworkers, et cetera, you want to keep updated throughout the process. And it might be helpful to have one person be your point person and let them know who you want information disseminated to. That way you're only communicating with one person, if that's what works for you. And all of these are, you know, pick and choose, whatever. Number two, if you find you have any triggers during communication, let people know. I ended up having to ask Trevor, hey, can you please let people know? Don't say I'm sorry, because that was triggering for me. Number three, your appetite might go a bit haywire. I was not hungry the whole time we were up there. It was weird. I've never had that kind of stress reaction before, but just maybe being aware, hey, your appetite might be a little crazy. If you're out of town, reach out to hotels in the area that might have an affiliation with the hospital, human and or animal, even if it doesn't say anything on the website. I wish I knew this from the beginning. Now we know, and now we use them. But there's a hotel right next to UF called Hotel Elio that on their website, it says no pets. However, if you have an animal that's having a procedure of any kind at the pet hospital or the vet hospital there, they will allow you to use their patient rate. So it's cheaper than the prices advertised on their website. And you can have your pet stay with you while you're there. That's something that I had no idea until we found out about it on accident. Okay, number five, look for food places that really pique your interest and don't be afraid to go back. Every time we go back up to UF for her scans, we go to the same bagel shop and we try, if they're open, to hit up a place that has good acai bowls because it's like happy comfort food. So as silly as that sounds, just looking for something positive to pair that association there. If you don't already have insurance on your pup, get it. And then these last three are a bit more on the emotional side. Number seven is give yourself as much grace as possible. I know it's hard, but if you can find it within yourself to give yourself grace throughout this entire process, that's probably number one, because your mental health is important throughout this. In order to be a good pet parent to your heart dog or your soul dog, you've got to make sure you're okay too. Number eight, if you know you have a certain amount of time left, and honestly, even if you don't, it's okay to make a list of things that you want to do with the time you have left. That might feel a little morbid, but it's okay to make the list and start crossing things off, especially if it helps you keep organized. And then the last thing is, in the time that you do have left, try to say yes more. And that's been interesting for us too, because we have little buttons that Freya uses that she's learned how to use. And her favorite button is her walk button. And so there had been times in the past where she would press it and look at us and get all excited. We're like, oh no, not right now. But throughout part of this, part of what we're trying to do is to say yes. So those are some of the things that I've learned about myself and about this process that I wanted to be able to share with people. So that's an example of one of the blog posts that I have about this.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for sharing that. I'm going to get emotional now thinking about those last three. Because yeah, somebody who doesn't have my soulmate with me anymore, there's a lot of yeses I wish I could still say to her. Yeah, that's hard.
It is hard. And in that sense, I do feel really lucky that I can do that. And I understand that there are a lot of people who that has passed. And in that case, I would love to recommend that you think back on some of the things that you absolutely loved doing with her. And some of those moments where you did say yes, and it was amazing, because those matter.
Yeah.
Those matter.
Yeah, totally.
And then there's Frank behind you trying to just distract you and say, hi, mom, just love me over here.
I know. My gosh, Frank. He always has a way of bringing me out of...
I think maybe Amira sent him to do that. I think that was your girl saying, hey.
Yeah. Oh.
I love you.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. That's just a really beautiful thing that you shared. Thank you. Sorry, it's just hitting me.
No, it's okay. It's okay to be emotional. This is why you have this kind of podcast, right? When the first time that you and I met, you told me that your vision and your mission for this was to normalize pet loss grief.
Yeah.
And I think that it is a beautiful thing to have an emotional reaction this strong to the loss of your soulmate, because she meant so much to you and still does, yeah. Still will.
Yeah, I especially resonated when you said, give yourself grace, because I think since losing her, but she actually had a cancer diagnosis. Oh, they found, incidentally, a spot on her lung, and then they biopsied it and they found it was lung cancer. And she was 13, and we consulted with oncology.
Oh, wow.
And the only option was a lobectomy. That period of time between, and I, as a fellow scientist, read everything there was to read about, because I believe it wasn't a metastasized mass. It was a primary mass in the lung, which is, I found out, more rare than a metastasized mass on the lung.
Wow.
So I did as much reading as I could. And apparently it tends to be a very aggressive cancer. And I should say too, her consult with oncology said, even with the lobectomy, a year is the best case scenario. And for us, we could put her through something like that, or we could just cherish every last minute that we could have with her.
Absolutely.
And yeah. Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay. This is a great example of how every single diagnosis, every single dog and situation and relationship, like everyone has their unique position and situation and what they go through. And if Freya was 13 when we got this diagnosis, we would have been looking at things very differently than her being 8.5.
Yeah.
She is, for all other intents and purposes, very healthy. And so for her to be able to go through that surgery versus fast forward to 13, I think we're looking at a very different scenario. And so absolutely, grace is the number one thing, because you're always going to look back and say, oh, I could have done this, or what if I did this? And the truth is, you made the best decision for her and for your family. Yeah. And that's important. Yeah. And it's okay.
Yeah. Thank you. Oh, okay.
Sorry. That's okay. All right.
It's funny, like after the first two episodes of this podcast where I just sobbed with Eduarda and Kristen, I like went to my significant other and I was like, I don't know if I can do this. What am I doing? I knew the gravity of this loss when I got that diagnosis. And even years before, I knew like Amira, which is beautiful in and of itself, like you recognizing that Freya is your heart dog while she's still here. And I knew Amira was like my soulmate for years and years. You are able to cultivate that relationship while they're still here instead of mourning the time that you wish you had, or the things you wish you had done with your animal soulmate, only recognizing it after they pass. But yeah, it was hard because I was dealing with a lot of the unexpected feelings that you mentioned when people would reach out. They weren't necessarily people that had animals. They didn't have the same connection to animals that I had. And I really appreciated that they reached out to me, knowing that, recognizing that this was important to me, that my animals are important to me. But there was this feeling in the back of my mind of, you don't get it. These are just words you're messaging me because you, that's what we're supposed to do for each other, but you just don't get it. And then through this podcast and other, like through my job and things like that, when you connect with somebody who gets it, it just feels so good. Like it feels good to cry about my dog with somebody who's like sitting in front of me and who gets it.
Makes you feel seen and heard and not alone.
Yeah.
In these big feelings that we have. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. If you don't mind me asking about the chemo procedure, what does a dog going through chemo look like?
On chemo days, usually the way that UF likes to schedule it is they schedule it first thing in the morning. So we would always go up the night before. So that way we weren't driving in the middle of the night. So we would go up and stay the night, show up around 7:30, whenever the appointment time was. And they would do blood work at first to make sure that her, I guess, white blood cells and red blood cells were in appropriate ranges to receive chemo. They were also keeping track of various renal values because it originated from the kidney and she now only has one kidney. So they would do blood work and urinalysis in the morning and a physical exam. And this is actually a little place that I'd like to plug some advocacy for your dog, because Freya is what I would call a fearful or a nervous dog. Even on trazodone, she gets very nervous in vet and hospital settings. And from the get-go, we had a big conversation with her care team at UF, and they agreed to allow us to have Freya in the lobby with us when they didn't need her immediately for procedures. So any time where they would typically put a pet in the kennel scenario, they would actually just walk her back out to the lobby and stay with us. So normally, if your pet doesn't need that or they're totally fine, what it would look like is you drop them off at 7:30, 7:45, and you just leave. And then they call you when they're done with everything. In our instance, we would stay there the whole time. So that way, when she's done with her blood work, they would come back. And if they needed to take her back for any other little thing, then they would go back and she'd do their thing and then she would come back out. But it was, for us, it looked like she'd go back once for blood work and your analysis if they needed that. She would go back again for if they needed to do like any subcutaneous fluids. They weren't at the beginning, but then they decided to do that because her renal values were sometimes a little bit off. So they wanted to give her more sub-Q fluids. And so she would come back out to us for that. And then she would go back. And the chemo, really super simple. It was a 10-minute infusion. So they would give it to her in usually one of her paws. So she would come out and she'd have one of her paws wrapped. But it was just super, super fast. But like it took all day because she had to go through these various steps and they would need to get the blood work back before they could do the next step. So it was a one day thing each time we would go every 3 weeks, but we usually arrived around 7-ish and we were usually gone by 2-ish. And depending on how hungry we were, we would either go down to where they had food there, or I would wait and Trev would run and grab some food and come back. So that's kind of what our day looked like. But yeah, it was very simple. We had to be very careful with the bandage because there would be like just the tiniest bit of residue. And because it's a very potent drug, they don't want you touching it. When the bandage was ready to come off later that evening, they would tell us wear gloves, take the bandage off and put it in the garbage and take the gloves off. That was another thing that I remembered. And then usually for a few days after chemo, her appetite was a little off. So we would supplement with wet food for a couple days, but then it bounced back. Like her appetite after surgery, oh my gosh, she was back to eating kibble almost right away. It was like magic because her stomach had room again. But chemo days were rough. She fights sedation big time. She doesn't sleep well whenever she's on those kinds of medications. I don't think she likes them very much. And I don't blame her, but did that answer your direct question about what chemo looks like?
It did, yeah. So for a few days, other than her appetite being down, did she behave any differently? Was she a little more withdrawn or groggy?
Not really. Once the sedative medicines wore off, from an energy perspective, she was back to normal. I like to tell people, if you didn't know that she had a cancer diagnosis, you would think she's totally fine. She acted totally fine. And it's been like that since surgery, basically. Really, it's just the GI stuff. When she would get the chemo infusion, she would have issues eating for a couple of days and her stools are soft. But then in the leading up to the next 3-week appointment, everything would be back to normal. And then she'd have her chemo and her appetite would be a little off and her stools would be soft and then leading back up into the next. Now she's actually on a daily pill for kind of maintenance chemo. So it's a different drug that we actually figured out because we did a Searchlight DNA panel back when we were trying to figure out what kind of cancer is this. They sent it off for molecular testing and gave us 2 potential drugs to use for her specific markers. So that's what she's on right now. So now we're going to our local vet once a month for blood work and your analysis. And then we have a telemedicine appointment with UF and they look over everything, say, okay, keep going. And then every 3 months we go back up to UF for a recheck of abdominal ultrasound and x-rays.
And the last time you were up at UF was last week, right? Was it last week or 2 weeks ago?
Yes. Yes. It was on today's 29th. We were up there on the 20th.
Okay. And how did that appointment go?
It went really well. I was so nervous. My most recent blog post is about this. And actually, I had just heard about you and was listening to your podcast. And it was, I get so ahead of myself. And so the longer it took for the doctor to come out and tell us everything's okay, the more nervous I got. But basically, the most recent update is that her scans looked really good. Blood work looks good. Your analysis looked good. There's one spot we're keeping an eye on her adrenal gland. But it's been there for several scans and it hasn't changed in size. So they're labeling it benign and we're just going to keep an eye on it moving forward.
Oh, that's so good.
All good. I'm really excited.
Yeah. Oh, Freya.
So there is hope.
Yeah.
Every situation is different, but just because there is a cancer diagnosis doesn't automatically, unequivocally mean worst case scenario.
And she's 10 now?
At least it's been like that for us. So her birthday's in July. So she is still 9, but she'll turn 10 in July. Trying to think about some fun things to do with our girl.
She's in the double digits now.
Come summertime. Yeah.
Oh, that's such good news. Such a good end to the story as it stands right now. Yeah.
But if anyone wants to read the nitty gritty details, it's all in my Canine Cancer Diaries blog. I think we're up to 20 parts now. And it details the entire thing.
Yeah. And we'll link all that in the show notes so people will be able to find it easily. And so how has this experience with Freya, or even just your relationship with Freya, how has it impacted your career as a pet portrait artist?
Quite a lot, actually. A couple years ago, before the cancer diagnosis, sorry, let me back up even further. So I left my job in the science world to become an artist because as much as I love science, the bureaucracy was very difficult and I needed a change. I took 6 months to basically learn how to run a business because I had already been doing photography for many years. So basically I needed to learn the business side of things. So on my own time, I figured out what I needed to do to get started, saved my pennies for 6 months and then jumped ship. And I didn't immediately niche down into pet photography, but I did pretty quickly and spent the next couple years as a photographer, which I still love. And I have a bunch of close friends that are pet photographers that are incredible all around the US. Kristen, who was interviewed on episode 2, is one of my dear friends. And let's see. So a couple of years ago, I commissioned a painting of a photograph that I took of my husband and Freya. And when it arrived at my house, I was so in love with this that I knew immediately I needed to learn how to do this. I mean, it was like light bulbs going off everywhere. It was like, oh my gosh, this is what I need to do. So I dove headfirst into figuring out what I needed to do to transition from strictly photography into painting. And this kind of coincides with, I had heard so many times, I created a couple of book projects for Tales of the Space Coast, the stories of the dogs from our area, who they are, why they're loved, what's going on in their life, and showcasing some cool places around our area. And I heard so many times from so many clients, oh my gosh, I wish I knew you when I had so-and-so. And it was a past heart dog or soul dog that they had years ago that they only had maybe a handful of photos of. And they're like, man, I would have loved to have done this when I had this other dog. And I kept hearing this And I would sympathize with them. But in the current world of photography, there wasn't anything that I could do for them in my current iteration of my business at the time. And this painting world has opened up just the most beautiful opportunity for me to work with additional people whose heart dog, soulmate has already passed, because I can take a photograph that you already have and I can paint it for you and create just a stunning, beautiful piece of artwork from a personal reference photo that really brings out the best in what you want to remember most about that pet. And it has been phenomenal to be able to talk to people about this, especially when you may have a different set of animals in your life right now that you adore. Maybe they are a current heart dog, maybe they're not. I feel like there's definitely room for different iterations of different kinds of heart dogs. But one of my dear clients from last year, she has a hearing dog. And over the course of her time working with service dogs, she had one several years ago that passed unexpectedly. Then she had another one that had just retired because they only are in service for a certain number of years. And then she has a new one that's very puppy, very high energy, but fabulous hearing dog. And we actually did this beautiful portrait for her where I took photos of the two dogs that she has living with her right now, the retired dog Ninja and her current dog Brandy. So in studio, I took photographs of them. And she sent me cell phone photos of the dog that had passed, Excel. And I was able to create a painted portrait of all three dogs all together, just like this one that I'm showing on screen here, but turned horizontally. And so all three dogs are there. And it is just such a beautiful representation of her story of the dogs that have changed her life all in one portrait. And that would not have been possible for me to do before. And so how this all ties back into Freya is in part that painting that I commissioned of her and Trevor, but also just everything that I do from a different perspective because of my relationship with her and how much she has changed my life over most specifically the last 6 years or so when our bond was able to grow when I left the science world. I feel like I look at the world differently, having become so close to Freya. The amount of grace that I give myself, the things that I stop and pay attention to, just the way that I enjoy life is different because of what I have learned from Freya and with Freya. And I try to bring some of that into every piece of artwork that I create. And part of that's also getting to know these dogs that I'm creating artwork for, because I know that everyone's bond and situation in their life is different. So I want to know what their version of that looks like. And I think about that and I try to embody that when I'm working on these paintings for people. So it's a very special thing that I feel like I can do for people. It means the world to me to be able to show off what I do and talk to people about how important it is to me and see the look in their eyes where, oh my gosh, we could do that for this dog and for that dog. And then this dog that we have still now. And it's like magic to be able to have those discussions and see them get so excited. I really love the work that I do and what I can create for my clients and the joy that it brings them. It means a lot.
So do you get the backstory of the dog or cat, whatever the soulmate animal is, do you get the backstory about what that animal is like?
Yes, very frequently. So all of my sessions start with a consultation over Zoom, depending on the situation. Sometimes it's in person, but most of the time it's on Zoom. And I get to know their story and I get to know what makes their pet so special. Like, why are we doing this? What is so special about this dog? because I know how special my girl is to me and how much it means to me to have artwork of her on my walls where I can just walk into a room and be like, yes, I love that so much. This just brings me so much love. And I want that for you, but I also want to know what that would look like for you. Tell me about this animal. And before I was doing paintings, I would still have similar conversations like this with my photography clients, to the point where I created kind of this series of 19 or 20 questions that I would kind of rotate through depending on how the conversation was going. And the feedback I got from my clients on that is, wow, these are really good questions. These are really deep questions. And so I ended up turning that into a journal that I now actually have available on Amazon, but love to be able to share with people. It's called the Heart Dog Guided Journal. And it's basically all of these questions. It was born from my consultations. I still use some of these questions while I'm on my Zoom calls with my new clients. But this is just a fun way for people to be able to keep track of their favorite stories and memories of their pet on a personal level where they can write it down in journal form. So that's something new as of, gosh, I think I published it. Oh gosh, no, this says 2021. So it's a couple years old now. Man, time flies. But that's something special that is born of it. And it's got my girl on the front cover, my Freya. And I've actually been working on it a lot this year throughout her cancer diagnosis. I've been taking the time to keep track of my own favorite stories about Freya. The blogs have been great, but sometimes going into some more specific questions about her and about our life together. And sometimes they're silly questions. Like one of them, I call it frustration overcome. Write about a time your dog has frustrated you because of something they did, or maybe they didn't do, and how you worked through it. When you think about it now, how does it make you feel? So sometimes it's not always like the cutesy, adorable things, because that's not the only way that our dogs can teach us about life. Sometimes it is about the silly or the frustrating things that they do. So this is related to what I still do, but also something that I offer to my clients and to the world in general, if they're interested.
I will be ordering one after we get off this call, and I'll be linking that in the show notes too, because I think one of the things that I certainly worry about the more time that goes by since I had Amira is, what if I start forgetting? What if I start forgetting all of these moments? Because I have 13 and a half years worth of memories, but what if I get to a point where I'm forgetting things? And I think that's such a nice way to be able to, first of all, give yourself dedicated time to think about your soulmate, and then also keep these stories as like a time capsule. So you can just read it 10 years down the road and be like, oh yeah, I remember she did that silly thing. Or yeah, I think that's so cool. And what I love too about, first of all, that you and Kristen have this awesome friendship. But one of the things that struck me in my conversation with Kristen was she was saying, like, I can't tell your dog's story in a photo if I don't know your dog's story. So it's really important to her to get that backstory.
Oh, absolutely.
And it seems like you have the same philosophy, even though I think the average person would be like, it's a painting of a dog. Why do you need the backstory? But I so appreciate that you sit and actually say, what is it about her that I need to know to capture her essence in this painting? And so you're not just doing like I'm doing a painting of a picture. You're doing a painting of the animal.
Absolutely. And sometimes it's down to something as silly as, what is your favorite thing about your dog from a physical perspective? We can get deep and emotional, but even I take some artistic licenses when I do my paintings. I think that it becomes a bit more of there's a little bit of me in every painting in that way. But at the same time, I need to make sure that I'm really capturing what you love most. And that might be the way the ear flips up just a little bit. There's a memorial painting that I did for a lovely woman last year. It was a memorial of her previous dog, Isabel. And sometimes in paintings, we don't include things that are super, super tiny because they wouldn't necessarily show up from a viewing distance of several feet back. But in this case, she told me that there was a trait that Isabel had on the tips of her ears. She had these like long hairs that would come down. So her ears would come to a point, and she was a kind of reddish golden coat color, but she had these like black long hairs that would come off of the points of her ears. And she thought that was the cutest thing. You better believe that I included that in the painting because that's so important. It was such a fun little factoid about Isabel. We talked about her Grinch feet. And so I made sure her Grinch feet were in this painting. We talked about her smile, like just little things about what people love most about their heart dog. I want to be thinking about that and embodying that while I'm painting because that's so important for me right from the beginning. While I'm doing the digital version of it, I want to make sure that what you love most comes across in this painting. Because when you see it, I want you to feel that. And so how can I do that if I don't know about your dog? Same kind of thing that Tristan said. But it's important to me to know those things so that I can have that love shine through me as the artist while I'm creating something amazing for you.
Yeah, I love that so much. That's amazing. And so how can people find you for your blog, first of all, and then also if they wanted to commission a photo of their heart dog?
Excellent. So I keep everything in one place. So my website is crystalheist.com. So that's Crystal with a K-R-Y-S-T-A-L, Heist, H-I-S-E.com. So I've got a blog section on there with my Canine Cancer Diaries section. I've got a What is a Heart Dog series on there if people want to dig into that a little bit more, especially since, like I talked about before, I didn't always have that growing up and I had to learn more about it. And I also have a bunch of resources on my blog as well, being an advocate for your dog, because Freya is a fearful and reactive dog. I've learned a whole heck of a lot about that side of things and that world. I'm not a dog trainer, but I have studied extensively with one that I treasure her friendship deeply, because she has been able to help me learn how to be the best dog guardian I can for Freya and help her live her best life. So I talk a lot about that and have several resources there. Definitely that's in addition to my artwork. I would love for any of your audience that's interested to commission me for artwork, but I would also love to be a resource for them if there is anything that I have experienced that would be beneficial or helpful. I want to have those resources freely available for people to take a look at. So all of that's at crystalheist.com.
Is there anything else to Freya's story that we may have missed or anything you'd like to leave the listeners with?
I would love to go back to one of the things I said in terms of recommendations to people when they have a cancer diagnosis, or just in general. Trevor and I try to say yes more, and we try to think about how we are living life with Freya. As difficult as this diagnosis has been over the last year, in ways that I never could have imagined, I have just felt such extreme gratitude. That word keeps coming up, and I know I've used it a lot in this podcast, but even to the point of planning various things with Freya. We had the opportunity to do Freya's favorite things that first weekend before her surgery. But since then, we created a bucket list for Freya and have started crossing things off of her list. And we've taken her on road trips. And we actually just in February, one of the things that we're like, okay, we're going to take Freya up to go see snow. And it was just this whole vacation that we planned around Freya, because that was one of the things that we added to our bucket list. And it just has been as magical as I feel like something like a cancer diagnosis has been, to be able to actively plan to do some of these things. It's far too easy to take life for granted that we're always going to have tomorrow and tomorrow. And this cancer diagnosis is definitely, as cliche as it may sound, you just never know what's going to happen in the future and how long you're going to have with your loved ones. And it has thrown into the forefront making more concerted decisions and being more intentional with how we spend our time together and with Freya. And so I feel very lucky that we have been able to do that. That does come with things like anticipatory grief. I've struggled with that a lot, being a pre-planner and a forward thinker. And so also having that we're doing the next best right thing for our girl to head that off has been helpful. So those are the kinds of things I guess I would like to leave people with for those who have heart dogs that pass. Big hugs. Love you. I know how hard that can be because I've been thinking about that in terms of our girl and my dear friends and clients who have had heart dogs that have passed. But for those who have current heart dogs or are looking for one in the future, being able to plan for the best day ever on a random day and not having to choose that for when you know the end is coming. Making a bucket list when you don't need to. Coming up with fun things to do and saying yes more while you have time right now. Even if the end isn't nigh and coming immediately, doing those things now, not waiting. We feel lucky that we've had the year that we've had with her. And I hope that it continues on for as long as it can with her, keeping her welfare and well-being in mind. But just trying to do all of those things because we can. That would be what I would want to leave people with.
That's perfect. I'm going to get next best right thing tattooed on my arm. So I just always can look down and be like, okay, Abby, we're doing the next best right thing. That just to me, that's like the major big takeaway from this is, yeah, just I love the intention behind it. I love how present you are in your relationship with Freya. And yeah, just this living bucket list, I think, is so beautiful too. Instead of waiting until you need to put one together, take advantage of her being happy and healthy now.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for taking this time. You are incredible.
Thank you, Abby.
I have a lot of resources now to continue to check out. You're awesome. Thank you so much.
And thank you. Really appreciate this.
I don't know how I've been so lucky with this little baby podcast of mine to connect with such incredible people. I honestly feel like I've known Crystal and Freya my whole life, which I know is so weird to say, but there is just so much comfort in connecting with another dog mom who has that animal soulmate connection. And there's just something about Freya, her kind eyes and her happy smile that reminds me so much of Amira. Just some of those lab characteristics are so pronounced in Freya, and I see a lot of Amira in her. So maybe that's why I feel such a strong connection too. In this episode, I also realized I did such a terrible job explaining that breed identification study. So for my fellow science nerds, I wanted to just briefly chat about it here in the outro for those of you that might be interested. Dr. Lisa Gunter has done a lot of really great work looking into shelter animal welfare. So if you're interested in that topic, I would look her up. She's done some really cool work. But she published a study in 2018 comparing visual breed identification of dogs given by shelter staff. And so what that means is when dogs are surrendered to a shelter or they're brought in as strays, the shelter staff, before putting them up for adoption, will label them as, you know, shepherd mix, collie mix, lab mix, whatever it may be, just based on visual identification. And so Dr. Gunter compared that to DNA-based breed results. So there are a lot of these commercially available DNA kits now where you just take a swab of the inner cheek of the dog and you send it away and it'll come back with the general breed makeup of that animal. And this study actually had a really big sample size. There were over 900 dogs across two Arizona animal shelters. And what they found was that staff were completely wrong in correctly identifying the predominant dog breed in 33% of the dogs. So what that means is that one in three dogs were labeled as a breed that couldn't be found in their DNA, even at the great-grandparent level. And so you might be thinking, who cares? You know, if I go to a shelter and I adopt a dog that's labeled as a shepherd mix and it ends up being a collie mix, it's no different. I love the dog. It doesn't matter what breed's in there. But the issue lies with a lot of these breeds, predominantly the pit bull and pit bull mixes that are stigmatized. And we know that dogs that are labeled as a pit bull or a pit bull mix spend significantly longer in the shelter system than other dogs that don't have that label. So it just really did a nice job demonstrating that we need to be cautious about breed ID and the stigma that still exists with certain breeds. There are a lot of counties and cities in the US that are banning pit bulls or labeling them as dangerous dogs and not allowing them within city limits. And if you're going to a shelter and you see a dog that you really like that would fit your lifestyle, but it's labeled as a pit bull, that may prevent you from being able to adopt that dog into the town or city that you live. So I thought it was really interesting. I will pop that paper in the show notes if you wanted to take a look at it. And you will also find in the show notes the links to Crystal's website, which includes her fabulous blog. I highly recommend taking a look at that. And also a link to the Heart Dog Guided Journal on Amazon. I have my copy ordered, and I cannot wait to curl up with a chamomile tea and spend some dedicated time journaling about my Amira. And as I was actually popping one of those copies into my Amazon cart, I was thinking maybe I need to order four more copies because I have four more dogs and maybe I need a book for each of them. And so, you know, you can see very clearly this is where all of my money goes. Actually, let me pop up my Amazon, see what my recent orders on Amazon are, because I bet you they're all dog related. Let's see. This might be fun. Okay, orders. Okay, so I have the Heart Dog Guided Journal coming. Prior to that, I ordered training bites, poop bags, which are very important when you have four dogs. I have allergy and immune bites. Those are for Dusty and his horrible allergies. Two bags of pill pockets. I have a leash and halter set, which also was for Dusty. There's a dog bed, which actually, I don't know what you call these types of dog beds. They're like these donut shag dog beds. My dogs, in any case, I don't know what they are, but they're obsessed. We have four of them in our house right now. They are obsessed with these dog beds. So yep, I ordered that. Oh, looks like on Valentine's Day. Look at that. That's cute. Okay, two more bags of pill pockets. And then January 24th, I ordered two books. So there you go. It took me 3 months of Amazon ordering to finally put something in my cart that was for myself and not for my dogs, which tracks. That makes sense. All right. That was a small little tangent. Before we wrap up, I also put two renditions of These Foolish Things Remind Me of You in the show notes. There are a lot of really good versions of this song, including from the OG crooner himself, Frank Sinatra. But of course, I'm partial to fellow Canadian Michael Bublé's version. And I also really like Seth MacFarlane's version. A lot of people don't know that he has like five albums and they're all amazing. So I put his version in the show notes as well. It's really good. The song in general, it's just a beautiful song. So there you go. You've got some jazz music to listen to until I'm back with you next week. And next week is our season finale, which I absolutely cannot believe. But anyways, I'll see you then. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Animal Soulmates podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please consider subscribing on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a positive rating or review. Follow us on Instagram at Animal Soulmates Pod for updates and pictures of our guests with their beautiful animal soulmates. This podcast is produced by Citizens of Sound. Our theme song is Mastering the Art by Big Score Audio. Have a story that would be a good fit for the show? Send me an email at animalsoulmatespod@outlook.com. That's animalsoulmates with an S, P-O-D, @outlook.com. Finally, are you thinking about adding an animal to your family? Why not consider adoption through your local animal shelter? There are plenty of dogs and cats just waiting to become someone's animal soulmate. See you next time.